This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pod save the king!
Hello and welcome back to Pod Save the King. It's a new year. It is not a new host. It is still Anne Grepper back for 2024, more than 6 years after we did our first show. And welcome back, Russell Myers, back again for the new year. Excited to be sharing another year of royal excitement with you. I hope you had a lovely time over the festive period.
I did. Lovely to see you. Welcome back, listeners. A new year, a new dawn. What will be in store for the royal family this year? Sometimes I like to sort of write down my predictions, and sometimes they might be a bit ludicrous, a bit zany, Sarah Ferguson having her own TV show. That could give you a sort of flavour about how
he's being tipped for Celebrity Big Brother.
Well, I've seen this several times, and PRs are furiously sending me emails like this into my inbox. I can't see it, to be honest. I mean, she'd probably be better off in the jungle, wouldn't she? Not metaphorically, just she'd been in the wilderness before, I suppose, when Philip was around. But I can't see her going into Celebrity Big Brother. But you never know with Fergie. She sort of had a stint on British daytime television. She's done America. She's now, you know, multi best-selling author, isn't she? So, you know, sky's the limit.
Lots of excitement to look forward to. Yes, and happy new year to you, listeners. I hope you also had a lovely break. But we're going to pretend it's still Christmas, because there's still mince pies to be eaten downstairs. Are you mince pied out?
I'm tapping out, yeah.
But we, you know, last week was our review of the year. I haven't been on the mulled wine today, I promise. But we haven't yet talked about all of the fabulous royal Christmasness. So we're going to pretend it's still Christmas and holiday season for a little bit longer and, you know, look back at the lovely times and interesting goings on that have been happening over this festive period. There's been quite a lot of royals on the TV. There's been some lovely photos, both in real life and shared on the social media. Thank you to the listeners who got in touch with their thoughts on the royal festive period, and we'll be sharing some of those as well. But I think, I don't know, one of my favourite thing, I think, has been seeing all of the pictures and, well, not just the pictures, actually, the interactions between the family, the extended family of the royals as they were heading to church and out of church at Sandringham. And, you know, Charles was there. He had a Christmas like me. He was there with all of his brothers and sister, all four of them together with all of their families, which was very nice to see. What did you make of the gathering?
Well, it was sort of an extended gathering this year, of course, wasn't it? Because of Camilla's children and grandchildren were there. So it was sort of like this blended family element. It's, you know, very, very modern for the royal family. I liked it, not, you know, making this a Fergie show, but I loved seeing her back in business. I mean, sort of not necessarily walking arm in arm. There was sort of ways of, they were trying not to walk side by side. I thought it was a bit more awkward than it should have been with Prince Andrew. But of course, he's back in the frame for the royals and sort of stepping out with them in public. And certainly we saw that after the King's coronation, that Charles was accepting of his role within the family element of the royal family. So not necessarily having a public facing role, but certainly being there for family roles. And I suppose Christmas is certainly one of those times. So What do we know from the Royals? They just kind of take it off, don't they? I mean, they're not back to work for another week or so, with not really a big period of activity for them. Certainly leading up to the King's message, his second one, which I found very enjoyable this year. I thought there was lots of elements that we can look at and look at how he's trying to shape his legacy by the words and the phrases he's using.
Yeah, we will definitely come to that very shortly. But I think, I mean, you were obsessed with Fergie. I mean, obsessed is possibly a strong word, but she is always good to see at these events because she does always look like she's a bit in her element and waving to the crowd and always very animated. But I think for a lot of people, the Tindall girls were the real treat. I mean, Mia upgraded herself and just wanted to hang out with her cousins and walking along with them. Louis hand in hand heading off to church, and then they were still hanging out together coming out of it, and then seeing Zara and giving her godson George a bit of a cuddle, and then Lena when she was coming out of church. And it's church when you're five, you probably, I mean, you're likely to either declare more music, can I have a snack, or can I have the crayons, please, while you're in there. But she's, pulling on Zara's arm as they're coming down the stairs. And there's an absolutely cracking picture of one of the looks she's given her grand Princess Anne in a proper sort of pouty small child way, which is very cute. And I'm sure lots of grandparents can very much relate to. Did you spot Princess Anne and Tim Lawrence's matching scarves?
I didn't tell me all, because
So apparently
it's really been boring over the photos.
they were both wearing, well, I have to say this, the Hello magazine had spotted this one. I spotted it on there. So the Highgrove Heritage Scarf, designed by Highgrove and the Prince's Foundation. So they were suggesting it might have been a gift from the King. So I like the idea that maybe when everybody arrived at Sandringham at breakfast time, it's like when you go to a football match for a special occasion, they put the scarves on the seats. So everyone's come down. And they've got a scarf there waving them around their heads as they're opening their Santa presents. And some lovely comments. I mean, I think we weren't the only ones that enjoyed seeing the family together for their walks. There's some comments from listeners. Nancy Hardy said, absolutely loved the annual walk to church. It was covered quite substantially here in Canada. Stephanie said they all genuinely felt like a family this year, especially with the Tyndall and Wales kids. Jack the dog, 1111, so lovely to see the natural and loving bonds between the Wales and Tyndalls. Heather Lee, love to see Fergie on the Sandringham Walk. I think we'll see a lot more of her this year. Utterly verbose, said, could have done with less Andrew, which it is difficult for the royal family, I guess, because he is. I guess essentially John's saying he's still my brother and he's still part of my family, and he may be sort of persona non grata in a public role, but he is there in those family times. And
Yeah, I suppose again, it's a different aspect if you're asking someone to, or the family being there on the balcony moments at Trooping. And they were not going to see Prince Andrew at any of these at all. But it's very different when you're walking to church and you're going with the rest of your family to leave somebody behind, because that is sort of private, quiet time, isn't it? Not necessarily quiet time. It's their private time. It's their holiday. So. They can do what they want, and certainly the king's direction was that Andrew would be involved. It may be unpalatable for some, and it may be, completely unchristian to others to leave him behind in the house. But he is there, so I suppose in their minds, there's no point pretending that he's not there.
and lots of people have turned out saying with flowers and presents, and I
Well, there were
think.
a lot of people talking to it. The one thing is that it's quite a, I suppose it's quite a risky position, isn't it? Because the members of the public can go to Sandringham. They don't vet to you, and so you could have someone chucking, rotten cabbages at you or whatever, tomatoes, eggs, as there have been, people pelting Charles with eggs last year. This is something that the royal family have got to contend with. So it was all very cordial, which I suppose is a win for them, and certainly for Andrew.
Yeah, I don't suspect many of the flowers and teddy bears were for Andrew, but the Wales children looked like they were having. I mean, they look so grown up now. They're sort of doing more and more bits and pieces while still being children and sort of enjoying their childhood. We obviously saw them arriving for the carol service, which I have to say I didn't end up watching because we were out at the crib service at our local church to see the service there, which was very nice. And I thought actually the King's Christmas message, when he was talking at the start about how for a lot of people it's a time of food, we actually didn't watch it live because we were busy eating our food. So he sort of kind of acknowledges that this is an important part of Christmas as well as his message. But clearly the carol service was enjoyed by plenty of people. Emily messaged to say amazing, carol service was wonderful, and the King's speech was 10 out of 10. Tony, aka Not Another Jungle on Instagram, said, loved the carol service. I made all the wreaths for Westminster Abbey, so it was amazing to see them. So well done,
you made
Tony.
Them.
Yeah. Someone's got to make the wreaths.
Fair play to Tony. Let's get him on the podcast. That sounds like an amazing job.
So yeah, and I think people were enjoying seeing the Wales children with their candles, and then Louis looked quite animated during Jim Broadbent giving his reading as well. So a lovely thing, I'm sure, for lots of people to enjoy on Christmas Eve. So the King's Christmas message, I have caught up with, even though I didn't watch it live. And I thought it was, very solemn. And it was very solemn and serious and meaningful. There was a bit of, pictures of some of the stuff that we've been doing this year, but it was quite a stripped back setting. He was standing up. We've been used to the Queen sitting down, certainly latterly. She's older, and seeing which pictures and things that she puts out on the desks and things around her. There's it's Charles. It's looking out through the window. It's a very beautiful Christmas tree, which will be planted afterwards, and has lots of nice sort of wood turned and orange decorations on it. I guess the things, caring, service and the environment, which I guess are three key themes which are very important for the royal family. And so there's that aspect, but then there was also the statesman aspect of very much sending a message of peace at Christmas time, which probably the world needs more now than it has done for quite a few years, really.
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, it was heavily laden with religious significance. And I suppose in reference to the conflicts around the world, you've got the Israel-Hamas war, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, bringing it back to that central tenet of Christianity, do to others as you would have them do to you. And that was, to me, one of the most significant aspects of it, really. I mean, of course, there was a lot of made about the Christmas message, praising Britain's army of volunteers, their selflessness to people who work, thousands of community heroes who are essential to our society. But it was really very much centered on that, peace and harmony aspect. And I suppose when you look back at the last few years, couple of two to three, four, five years of the royal family, there's been a lot of infighting. And Christmas is obviously a time to come together for families. Some families don't come together on Christmas because of internal wars within their own families. And I suppose that there is a dual element to this about trying to come together at a time of peace and using those lessons that were heavily laden throughout his speech, that one sort of casual observer of any religious aspect or indeed the monarch speech at Christmas might not be familiar with. But I thought on that aspect, using the speech to sort of give lessons, but then examples of things going on in the real world, was quite interesting.
Also talking about the shared heritage with Abrahamic religions is a very sort of pointed, I mean, he did talk about other religions beyond that as well, but specifically referencing the Abrahamic religions was a very pointed reference to the situation in Israel and Gaza and the Middle East at the moment, which obviously is on people's minds.
And he hasn't shied away from it. I mean, he has been very, very vocal and attending in showing his support for the Jewish people. And indeed, I suppose, trying to act as some form of mediator between the two sides from afar. I don't think it's anything we will see the royal family get directly involved in. But interesting that they've used language to describe Hamas terrorists and so forth and the support for the state of Israel, but I don't, it's not going to go away anytime soon, isn't it? So no doubt the royal family will be doing some more engagements surrounding the ongoing conflict as they have been to show support for Ukraine this year.
One of the things I actually thought was most, I don't know, special in some ways about the speech was the opening and the playing of the anthem on the other balcony at Buckingham Palace and seeing it from that different view. And then, as presumably a drone lifted up and you could see all the way down the Mall where there'd been such big celebrations in May, and just seeing it from that different view and that balcony, which I think they went out onto after the coronation to hear the big three cheers from that absolute massive military and all of their uniforms. So just sort of seeing that different, not exactly behind the scenes, but you've taken inside to the other side of the palace. And then the other thing I really liked, obviously, was seeing George and Charlotte getting their drills out and Louis absolutely caning it about with a spade, really going for it. I mean, I think he'll be building some massive castles on the beach in Norfolk in the summer.
Yeah, interesting to see what sort of imagery was used, because it's normally sort of a trip down memory lane, isn't it? But there wasn't too much this year, I suppose. And that the king probably wanted his words to resonate rather than, especially being from him, only his second speech, and last year was heavily laden with his mother's passing. But interesting, we only pretty much saw the Waleses and their children in a small snippet of the imagery used. I suppose it is deliberate, isn't it? Nothing happens by accident. I thought that was very, very interesting.
Yeah, I was looking out for it. I think there might have been a tiny showing of Princess Anne and the Edinburghs, and it was actually very similar in the royal family's, the royal family Instagram reel as a quick run through of loads and loads and loads of different pictures. I mean, it started with brilliant Charles and Camilla carriage cam, which is fantastic. Fantastic. Made me also think of carpool karaoke, because let's get some.
Oh, well, this is something to behold.
Karaoke. That would be great. Can you imagine? I mean, Fergie would be well up for that. She could be.
She'd be up for anything, I think.
She could be James Corden, and then she could have somebody come in her carriage and do carriage karaoke. Would be phenomenal. Fergie, you can have that one for free.
Producers, if anyone's listening, this is surefire success right here.
Absolutely. So they had the carriage cam and those nice little moments of Charles and Camilla interacting with each other, waving at the crowds and sort of pointing things out to each other. And then again, there's this series of still photos set up like a video. I'm sure many, many people have seen it already. And it's quite difficult to catch them because there's so many moving. So actually really quite quickly, and partly emphasizes, yes, we've been doing a lot of things, but again, there was quite a lot of the Waleses and their work and also of the children, and kind of minimal showings of Princess Anne and the Edinburghs, which, when you think that Princess Anne is the hardest working royal who does the most engagements, is really, I find it really interesting, that choice. And I don't think it's so much about the level of interest in her. It's about trying to portray a slimmed down monarchy, and it's absolutely about us, and it's about the future, and it's not about my two sidekicks and my sidekick's wife, who's an excellent sidekick in her own right. It's
very much that. It's trying to present this aspect of, we've slimmed down the monarchy. There's only us and the Waleses, and there's any other players that come out onto the balconies at these moments aren't necessarily part of the nucleus of the family, which is a little bit disingenuous, because they are still living as members of the royal family, as living on behalf of the taxpayer. And I suppose that when you look at some of these polls, that there is a move from the general public to have a more slimmed down monarchy. I tend to agree with Anne. I tend to agree from that, I did an interview with ITV News last year saying, how much more can it be slimmed down? We're still going to do the job of having the monarchy. And if you don't want to have it, then there is an argument to completely get rid of it. But there still needs to be a level of support for the charities and the organisations and the patronages that requires more than just two or three, four people at the top of the tree doing it. And you know my feelings on whether the Wales is doing enough engagements in the UK anyway. But that's why people like Anne and Sophie and Edward's contribution is absolutely key to what is happening in a sort of a modern monarchy. But they're not getting any younger. And so the patronages of whether it's the Gloucesters or the Duke of Kent, they are going to have to be passed over in due course. And so there will be more responsibility on those who are left.
It's interesting what you're saying about, what is the point of the monarchy? Because there was a story in Sunday Mirror front page
Yes.
last weekend about there's a £2 million poll being done by the government, 175,000 people being asked about the royal family. So it's part of a survey about people's lifestyles being carried out for the Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport. And it's sort of going on over a long period of time. I mean, Ingrid Stewart was fairly like, what is the point of this? We keep asking these people the same questions, and you always find some people want it, some people don't want it, but broadly the balance is people would rather have it. I mean, I guess you do have to keep asking the question, but equally, 9,000 people were asked last year, including about what the monarchy's main role should be. And in that survey, 28% said it was to provide a sense of continuity and act as a focus for national identity, unity, and pride. With 23% saying their main purpose was to undertake a constitutional role as the head of state. But the results, some of the early results of this hugely valuable survey have been published by the government. And we found out that 90% said they had heard of King Charles's coronation, which I don't know whether we should be shocked that 10% hadn't, or what is the value of this information.
Well, I was shocked at how many people had, it's a sort of recent poll, but how many people had actually engaged with the coronation? So that was either watched part of it, read part of it, consumed it in some way. And it
Just
was
over half.
huge. Yeah, I mean, that's massive. To talk about people being apathetic towards the monarchy and I suppose look at the view, let's look at the viewing figures of what people are engaging with the coronation, the Queen's funeral. There is still a lot of support for the monarchy, regardless of whether the Republican movements are growing. And I think our duty is to give voice to those fringe voices as they may be now, because at one stage they won't be. But it's still there's still a big support for the monarchy in this country and abroad.
I think it's also slightly unfair to say, what do you think their main role should be? Because actually, part of the point of them is that they do have all of these different jobs that make up that work and that function and, make up who they are. Who they are and what they do is they are the head of state. They are part of the focus for the national brand, if you like, and how we feel about ourselves. It's something we talked about a lot, probably before the Queen died and then after she died, and that change of, how her reign affects our identity and how now Charles's reign will affect our identity. Being the Supreme Governor of the Church of England, fine, the Christianity is no longer as widely practiced in the UK as a proportion of the population as it was in times past, but I don't know, it's that's part of what he does as the royal family. That's possibly, I don't know, in some ways maybe one of the more contentious things, and he's found it slightly
But then
interesting from his own point.
he is a man of faith, isn't he? As more so than his predecessors. And I think there was always that discussion of whether he would be defender of the faith. So he didn't go that far, but he's always spoken about different faiths and those elements that they can enjoy from each other, from the harmonious relationships with each other. And yeah, I suppose it's a bit disingenuous to just ask what's their role? Because it is multifaceted. Perhaps it's a bit lazy, but sometimes when you're asking people such a huge question, you need to boil it down to the simplest, lowest common denominator
But sometimes
sometimes.
you've
And
got to
then
make a
maybe,
choice, I guess. And then it's what you focus on. So we'll see what the results are. Maybe we'll ask our listeners to see what they think the main roles are. I'll try and do one of those Instagram poll things and get modern with the
Wow.
kids. So, well, I've established by watching the Wales's review of the year that I'm definitely too old because, I mean, it's very beautiful and it's brilliantly done. It's too fast. I can't cope. It just goes beep, 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 beep. And I can't just, I don't know, it didn't make me have a funny turn, but I couldn't see what was going on. It made me very frustrated. So clearly my brain
Was
doesn't
it that
process
you
things fast.
hold this is they're trying to play up to an algorithm that you have to hold the video so then you're on it for longer and then to get a boost of your viewing figures. This is the issue.
I don't know. I did establish that it was the soundtrack was Harry Styles's, as it was, and I very much enjoyed the music while the pictures went through.
Something for everybody.
Do you want a fun Harry Styles fact?
Always.
The Wales's first ever reel was also done to a Harry Styles track.
How do you know these things?
The internet told me. I was like,
okay.
Have they met Harry Styles? Have they professed their, you know, fandom for him? And they said, I think William met One Direction back in the day in 2014.
The Royal Variety.
A long time ago. So there may have been other meetings since, but you know, that was so I did enjoy that. Also, we cannot not mention the fantastic picture that the Wales has shared around Christmas. Another one from their Christmas shoot by Josh Shinner. Charlotte absolutely owning the situation again, right in the middle, arms around her two brothers. Right, you two stay here. I mean, George looks like he's totally fine and chilled out. Goodness knows what Louis is looking at off into the distance. It's that sort of, you know, Barack Obama looking into the future. It's like the picture I took of my, how old was she? 3-month-old daughter when I was trying to do her passport for my toe, which is an absolute nightmare. But there's one that's brilliant where she just looks like she's having this absolute vision of what the future is. I love it. And Louis is doing exactly that, like looking off into the future or maybe debating what he's going to have for lunch. But it's very cute. And Charlotte, I feel like, has been a kind of a real star of this Christmas period because we've seen a lot more of her than we have done for quite a long time. And I think she's changed and, I don't know, it feels a bit more like she's coming out of herself.
Arguably since the Queen's, late Queen's funeral, you know, we've seen a lot more of her, the more engagements, the putting her into the spotlight more at the coronation, you know, telling her brothers off for not paying attention or when to bow, or then you're seeing her very, very much front and centre of these two photographs that released over Christmas. Is this part of a ploy to sort of say she's obviously the most confident, I think, is that can be argued, can't it, of the Wales children, and it's giving an air of the fact that the next generation is in safe hands because she's so confident and assured at such a young age?
It must be something as well that, I don't know, if I was William and Kate, I think one of the things I'd be fretting about most in a weird kind of way. It's not so much like which schools are the kids going to go to or what I'm going to make them for tea. It might be like, you know, what is actually the future for Charlotte and Louis, and how do we not make them feel like Harry did to a certain extent, I guess, or for them not to end up like Harry and Andrew, because we've got two examples of where things have not turned out easily for some of the children who knew they weren't going to be king in that sort of spotlight.
A very different world now, though, isn't it? I suppose there's a lot more, the focus of the Wales is very much on their children, and they've not shied away from any of that, have they? They've said that they want to focus on their family and the relationships with their children to give them a better understanding of the world and hopefully give them a better grounding in order to, so he's been more comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah, that was probably another interesting thing. We've seen the Tindalls at Sandringham, some of the pictures, like Mike joshing about with one of the girls, and like a freedom of playfulness in some ways. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Tindalls. So, you know, they're off at the races for New Year's as well. And we see them living a different kind of life. It's still a very public life, I guess, through fame, partly through royalty, but also, you know, their sports people and have got that own place. And I don't know, we probably would feel very different about them if they were working royals in some ways, but actually they've got that, the royal adjacent, if you like, and a freedom, and it makes it feel different. So lucky them, really. So
this episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, You want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
But of course, actually, the biggest New Year message in the end came from Denmark.
Well, it did. I mean, could you imagine getting one of these ourselves? It would be a very, very different King's speech at Christmas time, wouldn't it? But the Danish royal family normally have an address, or the monarch has an address on New Year's Eve, and of course is as watched as our own sort of monarch's address. I think the King's speech was the most watched on the BBC over Christmas Day, and this is no different. And and Queen Margrethe of Denmark has had many sort of similarities with our late Queen over the years. I think they're like a third cousin or something. A lot of the royal families are related, aren't they? But Queen Margrethe only gave up smoking in public when she was in 2015. She was a former member of the armed forces. I think she turned up to a jumpsuit. Quite recently, over the last couple of years, to purvey Danish troops. But she's a real popular figure. And in Denmark, the royal family goes back, gosh, I think back to like 510 or something. It's got a real sort of incredible lineage. But the popularity is sort of was being called into question because Crown Prince Frederick, her oldest son, was engaged in a bit of a scandal recently. He was alleged to have engaged in an affair with a Mexican socialite called Genoveva Casanova. And they were sort of caught dining at a Paris restaurant. They'd been to a Picasso exhibition. He'd stayed over at her apartment, allegedly, or was certainly pictured going in at night and leaving in the morning. And it all sort of blew up. And the reason why this is sort of quite interesting, not just in Denmark, but the world over, is because Crown Prince Frederick's wife is Princess Mary, and she is an Australian national, or was an Australian national. They met in 2000 at the Sydney Olympics, and she was a marketing executive. And the sort of similarities between her and Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, have been widely discussed over the years as well. They look fairly similar. Queen Mary's a few years older than her. But so that sort of the similarities of our own royal family, sort of aging queen, quite glamorous younger members of the family. But Queen Margrethe has decided, after 52 years on the throne, to abdicate. So she is stepping back, and it's not going to sort of be a prolonged handover. It's happening in the next couple of weeks. So on January the 14th, she will hand over power to Crown Prince Frederick. He will become the new king, and Australia will have its first ever queen. Queen Mary will take the throne alongside her husband. So I suppose this is really, really interesting, because there was a lot of discussion about whether Queen Elizabeth II would hand over, whether she would abdicate if she was in failing health. She was doing pretty well up until the last sort of few months or weeks of her reign, wasn't she? But the conversation has sort of sparked more of a discussion about whether Charles would do the same thing. I mean, he's 75 now. Would he want to hand over to William at a suitable stage if he was sort of getting on a bit and realised that he just wanted to do a few years in the job? I can't see that, to be honest. I know that's been discussed quite widely, but I can't see that Charles would want to do it. But it's very, very interesting that the Danish royal family is not only slimming down. Queen Margrethe took away titles from her youngest son and their grandchildren. And that caused a bit of a stir in Denmark. And it's been quite interesting to see how Charles has had that rhetoric over the last few years about slim down monarchy, and it's sort of being replicated with the other European royals.
It must be interesting when you start out with a title and then it gets taken away, as opposed to actually just not getting it in the first place because you're setting out from the start, we're moving towards a slim,
exactly, yeah,
slim down monarchy.
And they weren't happy about it either. It caused quite a stir. And whether their sort of family relations, and obviously the discussion about whether Queen Margrethe has decided to do this now to sort of nip the scandal involving her son in the bud. The royal family, or certainly the Danish... I don't know what the Danish equivalent of Buckingham Palace is, so I should know that really, but they have not commented publicly, but it was sort of widely assumed that they were sort of fighting against the allegations, and certainly this is definitely going to move it forward.
She obviously put it down to having a time of reflection after back surgery, and actually in the events, pictures from the events over New Year, they seem to have like a whole series of events. There's a lot of them where she is sitting down, so possibly her health was not ideal. But I think because we've been so used to having a queen, I find it absolutely astonishing to find that she's the world's only serving queen now. And
I know.
Obviously won't be, so that's amazing. And she and our late queen obviously shared a long time on the throne, but neither of them expected to become queen when they were born. So it was due to be the queen's uncle that would have become king, and then presumably his future children. And in Denmark, the girls weren't allowed to do the job. And then the law changed when Margrethe was 13, so that she was going to be able to become the queen. So I think that's really, really interesting. But they're not going to have a big coronation party in Kiev. They're just hand over the keys and off you go. So there we go.
Keeping it real, bit of quiche, invite a few of the family over for a tipple and get on with it. But it'd be interesting to see, because this scandal has not only enveloped the Danish royal family, it's been widely discussed in Australia, because they are obviously quite intent on sort of keeping up with Princess Mary as she was, what she's up to. She has sort of endeared herself to the Danish people. They had a long-term relationship for about a year, and then she moved over to Denmark. She enrolled herself in university. She's fluent in the language. A lot of similarities between her and the Princess of Wales in terms of their public profile and their charity work. So yeah, it will be very interesting. I imagine there will be a royal visit to Denmark before long. We had Kate was over in Denmark year before last, I think, and she was discussing with Princess Mary a lot of the work that she'd been doing with early development, and that's a sort of interest of the new Queen Mary to be as well. So definitely we'll either have them over for a state visit or vice versa in the short future, I reckon.
And potential future occasional Denmark watch on Pod Save the King as well, so something else to look forward to in 2024. New Year honours, that's another thing that's been going on over Christmas time. Tony Hudgell, the 9-year-old, is the youngest to get the British Empire Medal. People think that Prince George's letter that he posted at Westminster Abbey was for Tony.
I mean, no more worthy recipient. I mean, his little boy is an absolute credit to his family, and then all the incredible, amazing feats he's achieved over the last couple of years. Would you accept an honour if it came to you?
Oh yeah, I mean, day man, I'll take that. It's fine.
Straight in there, number one.
I mean, I present a royal podcast, and you know the.
I think it's more of a debate. There was an interesting debate from Nitin Sawhney, who is a composer who I really, really admire. And he had turned down an OBE a long time ago. He's of Asian heritage. And he turned it down because of his... He didn't want to be associated with something with empire. And then when his father passed away, his father had told him before he passed away that he regretted that his son had turned it down. And then he was offered a CBE and he accepted it on behalf of his father. And he's a worthy recipient. But he made the case, as John Simpson has done as well today, that he should, that it should be Order of Excellence. And shouldn't this new dawn with a new monarch change it? from Empire to Order of British Excellence. And I would massively get behind that. And I'm sure an awful lot of more people as well would.
Yeah, it's interesting when you say that. So even when I was, you know, writing my notes for the show and writing out British Empire Medal, I was like, oh, that just feels so weird and alien. And, you know, for a nine-year-old to be ending up with something that's a British Empire just feels quite anachronistic. And just to give a bit more backstory for people who don't know about Tony Hadjil, so he lost both his legs due to injuries inflicted by his birth parents, who were jailed for 10 years back in 2018. And he's got wonderful sort of adoptive family, and he founded a foundation and raised more than £1.7 million for charity in the pandemic, which was a pretty epic effort. And he's met Kate a couple of times, including at Evelina Children's Hospital. So he's been doing a great job with that. Well, do you think we need to start a campaign, Russell? We're going to make a campaign to change the names of the medals? Because I think honouring people in society is a good thing.
Absolutely, of course it is. And recognising their achievements. And I think you do want something, if that's what you aspire to have, or you think that that's attainable and for certain people, I suppose. We should recognise their achievements, but it doesn't sit well with me, the whole Empire thing.
Well, let's change it. Let's change it, Russell. We'll give it a go.
I mean, before I'm offered mine, of course, and ambition. Then I can say I had a hand in my own.
Well, you could get honor. One for doing the change. I mean, that would be great. Play within a play. Some other people who got awards: Mary Earps, who we talked about on the podcast last time I recorded live with Jen Newton after she'd won the Sports Personality of the Year. So I imagine she might be hoping that she won't get it from William, because she probably gets to see him quite a lot through her football work. It'd be much more fun to meet the king. And Kevin Sinfield and Rob Burrow as well, who we also mentioned previously, who are campaigners around motor neuron disease. And it was their podcast, Rob Burrow's podcast, that the Tyndalls were on before Christmas. And King Charles, so most of the honours are sorted out through the politics and Downing Street and the special office that deals with it. But the King does get to give some of his own honours as well. King Charles has made the Archbishop of Canterbury a Knight Grand Cross of the Royal Victorian Order for getting the crowns on the heads without them falling off, and for doing a great job during the coronation, and years of service as well, actually, to various events. Dean of Westminster Abbey, the Very Reverend Dr. David Hoyle, has been made a Knight Commander, and the conductor of the Coronation Orchestra, Sir Antonio Papineau, has also got a gong. So that's, I guess you expect it in coronation year, that there'll be some special things dished out. So that's very nice. Right, I think we're done with the old year now, Russell. Let's look ahead to the new one. I mean, Princess Anne's got a nice trip coming up.
We haven't covered the coronation documentary.
Oh, yes. Boxing Day.
Fascinating. If you haven't seen this, hopefully it's coming to a broadcaster near you, because I got all my family gathered around. I couldn't actually make the preview that I had been invited to, which would have been very special, but it was very nice watching it with all my family on Boxing Day. And I loved it. I thought the behind the scenes element, taking you on sort of a journey of after the late Queen had died, preparing for the coronation, was actually very, very sweet, and showed the royals in a fantastic light, which you might not really get to see. And we're talking about what sort of a person is Charles? What was his legacy? What does he want his legacy to be? What is his relationship with his son and the family? Very, very warm with Charles and with William and Kate and the rest of his grandchildren. You saw different elements of a family man that a lot of people probably don't associate with Charles, because he is often referred to as a man from a bygone era, isn't he? But these different elements and the different ways that the family came together in order to sort of celebrate him and his big moment were very, very touching indeed.
Yeah, it's very lovely. And seeing some of the, obviously like grand preparations and every detail managed very precisely, but actually in some of those rehearsals, was it nervous laughter, or was it just genuine actual sort of relaxation and being able to enjoy some of those moments? Or, I've got the cape and I can fly. And
you know, my favourite part, talking about the Archbishop of Canterbury, when he was he was fluffing his lines. And Charles said to him, you know, something along the lines of, surely you've done this once or twice before.
I mean, it's the blessing at the end of every service.
And then they all sort of fall about hysterically giggling. And again, I thought that in the moment, it must have been huge, huge pressure. They're worrying about whether they were going to wear gloves to handle the crown jewels, and they decided not to, that you're more likely to drop things. I mean, imagine dropping the orb and the scepter and the rod with white dove or whatever it was. I mean, these are ingrained into my mind from this point.
Well, that was the thing I thought was most fascinating, coronation. Actually. Seeing the crown jewels and seeing them taken apart, and so, you know, the sort of the purple, I've forgotten the technical name for it, but the, you know, the hat bit essentially that holds the crown together, and
imperial
it's
state crown,
no, not the imperial state crown, just the purple bit, because the crown is the golden bit which comes apart, and some very brave jeweler has to take a hacksaw.
Oh yeah, I just saw that and I didn't realize that that happened. Obviously you imagine they've got to be resized, but it's not like when you just go to Moss Bros to have your top hat fitted for
just have Asuka. This one instead.
Yeah, exactly. They put, you know, a bit of paper mache in the top. They actually have to take it apart and remake it, I suppose, resolder it.
Take a slice out and then put a new bit in and match it up and do it in the right way. And it was absolutely.
And these ancient practices that you would have thought was, you know, who is part of the dueling team for the crown jewels. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. And so if you haven't seen it, it's well worth a watch. And it sort of gave me a different aspect to what I thought Charles's reign would be about. I suppose a bit of optimism for the future.
It was quite I mean, it was very positive. It wasn't
it was a
great documentary.
Great bit of PR, but yeah. Other than that, you know, what more do you want at Christmas? And a bit of Christmas cheer.
Oh, well, probably to know that I'm heading off to the Maldives and Sri Lanka.
Well, that
like
would be
Princess
nice,
Anne.
Absolutely, yeah.
That'd be very nice. Are you going to manage to get that one off for us?
I haven't got the nod for this one, bizarrely. Yeah, Sri Lanka and the Maldives would be absolutely tremendous, wouldn't it? Especially the way that the weather is at the moment. But
ding, no, ding, well, first weather mention of the year.
First weather, we got it in. It took us about 30 minutes, though, to be fair. We have a lot coming up. I mean, we've got I've got another trip, some intel on a trip I can't tell you about just yet, but give me a week or so, maybe we'll be able to reveal it. However, we certainly do know that the Waleses are going to Italy for their spring tour. We know that Charles and Camilla are going to Canada for their spring tour. We know that Charles and Camilla are going to Australia, New Zealand and Samoa being the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting that will be in October. And there's going to be a lot to look forward to. I think this is going to be the year of expansion, I suppose, and getting out, because we really haven't seen too many foreign tours, especially from the Waleses. 3 days, is that enough? Not really enough, really, is it, for them to go to Italy? It's not like a 2 week Caribbean tour, 2 week tour of Australasia. It doesn't seem like, I suppose you can get a lot done in 3 days.
Well, yeah, and you want to do, basically you want them to do another one as well. It's not about spending more time in Italy. It's about going to
more
places.
Well, they're not
going to
be doing that though, are they? They're not going to be doing that. I mean, maybe, but let's wait and see. Who knows?
Come on, Russell. Okay, well, what's your New Year's resolutions for the royal family then?
What are they? Less, I suppose, I mean... doesn't serve a purpose because we are talking about it on this podcast. Certainly later this week, we're going to see more scandal. I was going to say less scandal, less infighting, but that would probably be their New Year's resolutions. But it will be very interesting to see the unearthing of these documents that we're expecting in the coming days in the US. There's the Miami Herald have been fighting to have the civil case documents unearthed, and there are going to be more legal papers unsealed, and they will include the names of 170 individuals, including Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew, and the relationships and sort of travel diaries to do with Jeffrey Epstein. And this was way back when, from 2005 case involving Ghislaine Maxwell and Virginia Giuffre and some other allegations from a lady called Joanne Soberg. So let's wait and see. We'll have plenty to talk about next week. And what does that mean for the royal family, you know, kicking off the new year, still talking about Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein? It seems a bit Groundhog Day, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think my New Year's resolution would be, because I'm always an optimist, is find a way to get friends again with Harry before it's too late. And that goes for all of them.
Well, maybe. That might be a realistic one. You never know.
Well, we live in hope. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We hope you are hopeful at the start of 2024 and have some exciting things to look forward to. One thing you can certainly look forward to is Pod Save the King every week with me, Russell, a host of guests, interviews. If there's people who you think we should catch up with, thank you for those of you who have sent some suggestions through recently. And I'm definitely looking to get some of those in the diary, but we're looking forward to sharing another year of royal adventures with you. So, Russell, thank you very much for kicking off 2024 with me. I'll see you again very soon. And listeners, until next time.
Pod Save the King!